I have to say, I've not heard much about cyberfeminism before, but the research that I was doing for this, it felt quite, I guess, cyberpunky. Like, it has a lot of attitude. what got you interested in this field in the first place?
Well, my work as an activist, I guess, because before undertaking this project, I was a PhD student and my research was about ISIS and their narratives, how their narratives were translated into like national and international media discourses. But at the same time, because, you know, I am, I come from Iraq, so this is my home country, so I could not be like disengaged from what the events that were unfolding at the time. So at the same time I was writing my PhD thesis, I also started to really be to engage with the social media and to like build networks with Iraqi activists. And what triggered this, or what motivated me to do this project focusing on women in particular and on feminism, was the sexual enslavement of Yazidi women in the north of Iraq. And that was the second chapter of my thesis and my book now, because I managed to turn the PhD into a thesis into a book. So yeah, that was really heartbreaking and very emotional. So from that moment, I started to be engaged, you know, in feminist issues. And I also would like to credit the incredible feminists, not just in Iraq, but also in other countries. They are very young, but they are very educated, and it's very similar to the second wave, you know, feminism in the West, because they are trying to like circulate knowledge around feminism and educate women and also men about their rights, equality, and those essential concepts such as patriarchy, misogyny, etc. But it's also challenging because, I mean, social media is not disconnected from the real world. It has like material and physical dimensions. And those activists always like get some sexist online attacks, threats, shaming, all those sorts of things.
Sure.
So, yeah. So that really, I wanted to find out more, and I wanted to find out more about how context impacts on cyberfeminism in different countries. So not just in Iraq. I tried to look at Iraq in addition to Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, and Yemen. And I wanted to see the impact or the relationship between cyberfeminist networks or activism and the real world. What kind of impact does this work create in the real world? And also what kind of challenges faced by the feminist and or women's rights activists in these countries?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, sounds like a very noble pursuit. In your work, you were talking about women activists in Arab regions becoming more prominent online. Can you talk us through why this is significant and what's sort of been happening as a result as well?
Yeah, I think the use of cyber spaces has become really prominent since the Arab Spring uprisings, because, you know, social media was used as a tool for activists to mobilize. And at the same time, it opened an opportunity for women to also talk about feminist issues. But at the time, around I think 2011, how the issue of feminism was framed was within the nationalism, or, you know, national cause, because they still, you know, advocated for their protest and the cause was not purely feminist, I would say. But that started to change later, gradually throughout the years. And women started to engage more directly in women's rights issues and gender issues, feminist issues, etc. In the context of Iraq in particular, cyberfeminism becomes really salient after the 2019 protest movement, which is the largest, which was the largest in the country, and it saw a remarkable, or witnessed a remarkable participation of women, maybe for the first time. And so, because the protests also faced harsh security crackdown, and there were lots of assassination campaigns and the kidnappings, which also targeted female activists, they resorted to social media. And when the protest movement died out, partially due to these reasons, but also due to COVID, the impact of the pandemic, women started to like mobilize for their cause using different social media platforms, including Twitter, Instagram, and also Clubhouse when, you know, the app was launched, I think, in last year, 2021. So women, I think Clubhouse was really important in the case of Iraq, but also in neighboring countries, because it gave women a voice. So they started to engage in discussions and conversations and debates. So it's not just the written text, not just this medium, but also another medium, which also gave them legitimacy and authenticity. Because of the challenges facing them, the majority of those female activists try to use anonymous names just to protect themselves.
Sure, yeah.
So when they started to chat to each other and to speak about their experience, speak up about their experiences, so it's kind of, you know, reinforced their identity and the embodied nature of their experiences and of their identity. Mm-hmm. And then after that, Twitter launched the Spaces, like Twitter Spaces, which is another, you know, audio feature.
Mm-hmm.
And also women have been using it to discuss many issues. And among one of those issues is hijab. So even before the current protests in Iran, hijab has never been absent, I would say, from the discourse on feminism, whether in Iraq or in the neighboring countries, especially in the Gulf.
Mm.
There is also always discussion about whether hijab should be enforced, whether it's a personal choice or it's a symbol of oppression. So all these kinds of debates. And women also, especially young women, started to share their experiences of, for example, removing the hijab, because many of them were obliged to wear it, whether for religious or social reasons or political reasons, etc. But they made the decision, when they made the decision to remove the hijab, they reported on this on social media. And again, they would always face like backlashes, because, you know, I would always say or argue that it's easier maybe to choose to wear the hijab, but it's much more harder if you wear the hijab and then decide to remove it.
Absolutely, yeah. Sure. And on a more informal note, isn't it ridiculous how few rights women around the world seem to have? Like, we just have no bodily autonomy, no autonomy over anything. Like, obviously, I definitely acknowledge that I'm coming from a more privileged country, but it just blows my mind that stuff like this still happens in this day and age. Like, it's 2022 and we're still fighting for very basic rights.
Yeah, exactly. And it's everywhere. I mean, if you look at Iraq, for instance, we don't have like a law that says explicitly that women need to wear hijab. Mm. We don't have that. It's unconstitutional. But at the same time, the constitution itself is full of contradictions. And particularly Article 2, I think I mentioned that in the article. It says that it states that, you know, Islam is the basic source for legislation, but at the same time, uncontested rules of Islam should not contradict the law or something like that. Mm. So this has like given a window or an opportunity for religious figures or power of tribal figures or whatever conservative figures in the society to exploit this and to impose hijab in different ways, informal ways. And now we are seeing many campaigns on social media. And that's why, again, why cyber feminism or cyber activism is really important, because otherwise we wouldn't have known about these issues going on in the Iraqi society. Campaign against compulsory hijab in many schools, I wouldn't say all schools, but many schools across the country, especially in conservative areas. And this is an informal, you know, way of enforcing hijab. And the activists are basically sharing the stories of female students and sometimes their parents or even junior teachers who are sending them messages telling them what's going on in these schools. So this is one example. And if you look at other contexts, for instance, in secular countries like in France, for instance, we still have like anti-hijab policy. So I would always say this is like two faces of one or two sides of one coin, because again, the autonomy of women is targeted, and women should choose
either
whatever
way
she wants, whether to cover or uncover. Having said that, I believe that it's really important to engage in critical discussion around hijab as an ideology, around hijab, you know, and the history, for instance, of hijab as an idea. But we need to differentiate this from women's choices, whatever the reason for that choice. I mean, if a woman tells me that this is her choice, she really wants to wear hijab and no one is enforcing her, I can't do anything.
Yeah.
It's none of my business.
Absolutely.
I should respect that. So, So we can see like, other parallels, whether in France or India, it's in the other way around.
Just to cut you off there.
Because we saw that this didn't work in the case of Iraq, because there was a lot of talk about, you know, invading Iraq to liberate Iraqis, but the opposite, you know, had happened. And I really quite remember when the then U.S. President George Bush was addressing an international audience on Women's Day, International Women's Day, and he was referring to the liberation of Iraqi people, but mainly women. But at that time, the situation was really horrendous in Iraq, and patriarchy worsened, misogyny, and this was these were compounded by increased Islamism and also militias and tribalism, because you know when there is like a weak or fragile rule of law and weak institutions, of course this would like give an opportunity for other actors in the society, especially tribes, to be stronger. It would strengthen them. I think that would be the best way, and especially now with all the talks about imposing sanctions, the sanctions imposed on Iran, I'm hearing like different perspectives by Iranian people. So again this is something I would leave for them to decide,
sure,
whether you know enforcing sanctions would on the regime would help them or on the opposite would hurt them, because they would be impacted, I mean, by poverty, the lack of medical equipment, etc. Because I have like an unpleasant experience in Iraq, although the contexts are different. But again, we've seen what the impact of the economic sanctions on the country. Again, enforced hijab was one aspect of the outcomes of the economic sanctions. When Saddam Hussein launched his faith campaign, and he started to encourage women to wear hijab, you know, as a way, it's like a popularist, you know, approach to absorb people's grievances and anger at the time. So I would leave this, I mean, for the Iranian people themselves to decide.
Sure.
It's not my business,
Yeah.
To say what needs to be done.
Absolutely. And that's the end of my questions. Was there, if